Raf will be joining us up a little later on as normal, but our guest today is a man who really should need no introduction. He's an old faithful here at World Football Daily. He's a Sheffield Wednesday fan as well, like myself, so we always get on like a bit of a house on fire. Today, joining us on the line right now from goal.com to talk all things Serie A and plenty to talk about from the weekend as well is Mr. Chris Vokes. Chris, it's a pleasure to have you back again on World Football Daily, mate. It's been a while since we've last heard from you.
Yeah, so I've grown two beards in that time. Yeah, it's good to be back on, mate.
It's a pleasure to have you back, and it maybe not a pleasure to see some of the headlines coming out of Italy and from the weekend. And we'll start first and foremost with the serious issue of what took place at the San Siro, the Roma fans barking racist chants at some of the AC Milan players, Mario Balotelli, of course, included in that. How did you think that situation was handled? Was considering what the Serie A bylaws kind of say, was that dealt with in the only way and in a very acceptable way by the officials that night?
Well, this isn't the first time that kind of thing has happened with Roma at San Siro before. Albeit when it happened previously, it was to do with the excessive throwing of flares. It was to the 2010 Supercoppa Italiana game between Inter and Roma. And on that occasion, so many flares were being thrown into the goal mouth behind the Curva Sud that the referee stopped the play and asked Francesco Totti to go and appeal to fans that time. He basically kind of, you know, that time just ambled towards the 18-yard box, shrugged his shoulders a little bit, kind of raised his hands a little bit, and they stopped. And I think the fact that somebody like Totti has such an influence over the fans is a kind of is something to get you through a game like Sunday night. It's not going to happen with every club. It's not going to happen with every captain or leader kind of thing. This isn't the first time that Roma aren't the first club to have trouble with their fans with racist taunts this season or previous seasons. It's a running problem. It's a massive issue, and something more needs to be done. And I don't think it helped that when Juventus had that Juventus were punished for racist abuse in recent weeks, they had an opportunity to really clamp down and set a marker, especially given what happened with Propatria and Kevin Prince-Boateng earlier in the season. Mm. They had a great chance to set down a marker by banning Juventus fans from the ground for one game. It would have been the game when they celebrate the Scudetto as well. It would have been a massive, massive statement, and they took the easy way out and made it another financial penalty, which the fans don't feel at the end of the day.
What about after this incident then? Because Roma take on Napoli in a big game, of course, on the last day of the Serie A season. Should they now use this as the opportunity? Should Roma fans be barred from the last day of the season at the Stadio Olimpico?
Yes, but then they should have done this one incident ago, two incidents ago, three incidents ago, probably, you know, from the start of the season. Basically, you know, particularly from January when the Boateng incident happened, it was football's chance, not just Italian football's chance. It was football's chance to really ride off the back of something, ride off the big back of a massive statement. And what did we hear? We heard Sepp Blatter saying, "All very well and good, but that's not how we've got to deal with it." Well, it is. We've got to punish the fans because it's the fans that are doing it. And as much as yes, it's a minority of fans, you don't get the pressure from the majority of fans on the minority of fans. You don't get them pointing out the racist bunch among them without kind of forcing them into some sort of action. At the end of the day, we've got a collective responsibility as football fans, and that's the only way that it's going to happen. You've got to start giving stadium bans to clubs, or else it will just keep going on, because as I say, you can fine clubs, but it doesn't really punish the fans.
How did you think, as I said, the officials handled it? Were they right to stop the game when they did? Should it have happened earlier in that match between Milan and Roma on Sunday night? And should it have been abandoned at any point at all? Should that thought process have come across the officials' heads at some point?
Possibly. You know, I think there's always the possibility for that. I think they're very mindful of the fact that, you know, there's these laws now about when, like, within the UEFA's rules and FIFA's rules about when you've got to finish a season. And obviously it's very late on, like you said, penultimate round of the season, and where do you find space to fit it in and all that lot. And I think sometimes the politics goes through their minds a little bit too early in situations like this. I think that you know, sometimes we can make judgments as fans and pundits and commentators and whatever we are by saying, well, they could have reacted earlier as soon as we heard it. Well, you often hear about kind of tunnel vision and not being sure, like from players as well as referees, about you don't always hear, it's just a kind of dull noise in the background sometimes. Obviously, this was different. But again, it might not have been quite so apparent quite so early to the officials. You've got to kind of tip your caps to them to an extent in that something was done about it. But at the end of the day, I don't think they've been very well led by authorities. And as I say, Sepp Blatter had a great opportunity earlier in the year to say, right, let's get on top of this. He didn't. And, you know, it's not up to the odd referee to make a standard. It's up to everyone, and it starts at the top.
We saw obviously the bad in that game. We saw the bizarre in that game as well. And I'm not just talking about AC Milan's gold shirts. The sending off of Muntari for manhandling the referee. I mean, what do you think is going through a player like Muntari's mind like that? Just physically grabbing a referee. And was he right to be sent off? Because he wasn't seemingly doing it with any malicious intent, but he was manhandling an official.
Yeah, he had to go. It was absolutely ridiculous. I think he thought he was a nightclub bouncer or something. It was just like it wasn't as though he was hugging him. It wasn't anything like that. He was actually, yes, he wasn't trying to push him over or anything, but there was a fair bit of force by the looks of it. He was moving him with his arms. It was just bizarre that he chose to do that. And yeah, it was a definite red card in my mind. And yeah, as you say, very, very strange one. But yeah, don't get me started on those kits they were wearing. Jeez.
Oh, no, as a Milan fan, I can say that I am embarrassed personally by those gold shirts. Although you've got to admit that the little Italian kind of flag on the left side, just above the Adidas logo, I thought actually looks quite smart. But we won't get into football kit design right now. I can't defend the indefendable of those gold shirts. Talking about Milan, though, they finished on the last day of the season away against Siena. It's a vital game. They got really 3 points to ensure that they have Champions League football for next season. How many opportunities have they missed in the last few weeks in terms of when Balotelli was suspended and just by foolish play? If they don't make Champions League football next year, will they be kicking themselves, or will they still be pleased to have just salvaged what at the beginning of the season was a very daunting possibility of even making Europe, let alone the Champions League?
It's been a very roller coaster campaign. You know, they were down in 15th or wherever it was by mid-November, and they were looking very, very poor at that point. The only player that was actually doing anything positive at that point of the season was Stefano Chiarelli, who was still only 19 and, you know, playing beyond all expectations. Then they started to put it together a little bit. But there was something not quite there. By February, you know, they were probably favourites for second place. They were in great form and everything. But when it's come to... I suppose they always say when the sign of a great side is being able to respond when you're not winning. It's once you get onto that winning run, it almost feeds itself in a way, and it's about then how you respond when you're not getting results. And when they started to just have a bit of a rocky patch, they've not looked completely convincing. And yes, they first of all, well, if they don't finish third, then it's that they'll be kicking themselves, and it's their own fault really. But then also, if they don't beat Siena away, then you know, you've got to claim that they don't deserve to finish in third place as well. Siena are not good, obviously already relegated. Fiorentina already relegated side in Pescara as well. So they start 50-50 in that respect. But, you know, as I say, if Milan can't beat Siena, then, you know, Fiorentina are deserving of third place.
You mentioned Juventus and lifting the title this weekend at the Estadio Juventus. And obviously, Juve's unbeaten season last season was unbelievably impressive. How do you think these two seasons compare? Because they've had more wins this season, but those four losses obviously meaning it's not the unbeaten season for a second time in a row. Has this been a better Juve performance, though, overall, do you think, this year?
Oh, I think it's been infinitely better in so many ways. They've been much stronger as a unit. They've been far deeper. Obviously, last season it was a bit kind of a nervy rookie campaign in a lot of ways. It was only in those last 10 games, when I think they won 9 and drew 1, that they really started to put it together. You know, going into March, I think they were 7 points behind Milan in late March after Milan had beaten Roma. And at that point, Juve still had more draws than victories, and they were kind of bumbling along for a lot of the season, and they were finding it very difficult to overcome sides. This year, they've steamrolled a lot of sides, as much as they don't have a lot of kind of big 4-0 and 5-0 victories, which you might find in other leagues. It's kind of not the Italian way. They have kind of really got on top of sides, got two goals ahead and to just close games out very often this season. And I think as a unit, as a destructive force, they've been so much better this season. They've shown the ability to win games that last season they'd have got nowhere near winning and might have eked points out of. And as much as they had this kind of high pressing game last season, they didn't really convince in enough games really to suggest that they were a side who would then go on and win a league by kind of 10 or 15 points, and it did take them until the penultimate round of the season. But this year, yeah, they've been so much better. And despite the defeats, as I said about Milan, you know, they've actually shown that ability. When they'd lost to Inter, they bounced back. When they lost to Milan, they bounced back. And, you know, they've done it at each turn against Sampdoria and against Roma. It hasn't been the start of something. People, especially after the Inter defeat, when it was their first defeat in 50 games, a lot of people wanted to see how they'd respond, given that, you know, it was their first defeat in 18 months. It helped that they played Pescara away in the next game and won 6-1, but it was just that the way that they went about that first half, scored five goals in 30-odd minutes, and you just knew that they were a class act right there and then, because you know, the way that they took to that first half is the way they've taken to a lot of games this season. They've just really gone at teams, and they look a much better all-round side this year.
The Italian title is so important to the sides in Serie A, and the chance of winning it obviously can never be kind of shunned for other glories. But will Juventus have a slightly different approach, do you think, next year, having won back-to-back titles? Will Europe become a major focus in the same way that we've seen Dortmund make Europe a major focus, and everything else has been slightly put on the back burner, if you will?
Not necessarily. I think that... As Giorgio Chiellini said in the last day or so, you know, everyone's talking about Dortmund as this great kind of idea to follow. You know, this is the way that they've got to go forward. They're now in the Champions League final. Last year they went out in the group stages, as he pointed out. You know, it's not you can't put all of your eggs into that one basket, because if you get a bit of a tough group, then you know it could be over by December and you could be chasing your tail a little bit in the league. As you say, it's a massive, massive thing for Italian clubs to be the best country, the best club in their land. And you only have to look at, I suppose, Manchester United, the way that they've dominated English football over the last 20 years. Yes, they've only won two European Cups in that time. But try telling everyone at Old Trafford on Sunday, with you know, celebrating Sir Alex Ferguson's feat, so that should take away from it. They've absolutely dominated English football, and Juve now, after, you know, after what happened with Calciopoli, without a title in those 6 years in between, to actually stamp a mark and build a dynasty in Italy seems like such a massive thing to them. And yes, they'd love to have a better European record than they've got, you know, two Champions League titles. But I think the thinking is for them that if they get everything else right, if they get it so right that they're well on top in Italian football, then they can start to think about how to expand that into Europe. And I'm sure that's part of their thinking this summer. But first and foremost is defending the Scudetto once more and making it 32/30/, however many people think it is these days. So,
A side in Serie A, Chris, that's had a real fall from grace, fall from that upper echelon of Serie A football, has been Inter Milan. You're the expert. We've debated about this over the last couple of weeks, about Stramaccioni's future. Does he stay? Does he get given the opportunity to take Inter on next season? Or will there be a change at the top of the managerial pecking order at Inter Milan?
This is a really tough one for me. When Stramaccioni was given the job in the first place, I said, even before he'd had a game in charge, as part of a big blueprint towards Inter's future, towards what they really need, they've got to give the next coach a good couple of years to get his teeth into it. That's one thing they've not really done in a long, long time. They've been through so many coaches, either side of Mourinho and Mancini, that, you know, they got a few years between them. But besides them, under Massimo Moratti, they've just not given coaches a chance, and they had to give somebody a chance. They've given it to Stramaccioni. But, you know, as much as he's had all sorts of injury troubles, I just, there have been certain times and certain things within their play this season that I'm not completely convinced by. You know, that players like Andrea Ranocchia, for instance, you know, he signed for 2.5 years ago from Genoa. He came with a few clear kind of defensive deficiencies. He's got a lot about him physically that should mean that he can become a very, very good player. But I don't think he's improved, and maybe he's even regressed in those 2.5 years. His best days, yes, he's had good little spells with Inter, but his best kind of most consistent days were probably when he was at Bari. And it's up to coaches, even if you're fully at full strength all the time, it's up to coaches to get the very best that you can out of the players that you have available, and particularly so if you've got injuries going on elsewhere. And he's just not been getting the very best out of players enough. I think he's adapted some things well in terms of like pushing Frederic Guarin higher up to get the better out of him sometimes, partly because he defensively is not very good in the centre of midfield. But, you know, he's not done that often enough. He's not found the answer to enough kind of queries when it comes to tactics and technical points. And you know, after the season they've had more defeats than ever before, barring one season in the 40s, I think it was, I checked out. You know, it's just so difficult to lend your whole weight to the case of keeping Stramaccioni on, because I do think there have been quite a few deficiencies in their game this season beyond just the injury problems.
Chris, we've taken up plenty of your time, but just one quick last one before we let you go, if that's all right. Udinese, the informed side in Serie A, 7 wins from their last 7. Udinese, where is this run of form come from, aside from maybe a slightly weakened schedule? And how much emphasis does this Udinese's run, if they can hold off and keep fifth place in Serie A, how much does emphasis does that suddenly put on the Coppa Italia final between Lazio and Roma in the fight for a Europa League place?
I don't think it'll change the emphasis of the Coppa Italia final one bit, because it's Lazio, Roma, and just a trophy at the end of it. So I think they'll be fighting hammer and tongs either way. Even if Lazio made it to fifth place, they want to beat Roma. They want to keep Roma out of Europe either way. But I think the main thing, the main thing with Udinese is just that this season has been a very trying one, in that, as people said, the way that they let go of players last summer, a lot of people actually tipped them for relegation, such was the way that they weakened their squad. But at the end of the day, they just keep finding these players who put it together for them. And I think Guidolin has finally, in the last 7 or 8 games, got the team playing the style that he's kind of wanted all season. The squad, the kind of first 11, 12, 13 players that he's wanted to get the best out of all season. And this is an example of the kind of Stramaccioni thing. I think Guidolin is fantastic at getting the very best out of the players that he has at his disposal. And the way that he's gotten them to the Champions League playoffs for 2 years running, he's got them to the verge of the Europa League despite the losses of last summer. And the way that, you know, even looking back at his record, he had a fantastic record. He was the guy that took Palermo up in the first place and did very well with them in the first season. This is just a very, very, very good coach. And yes, Antonio Di Natale has scored 102 goals in 4 league campaigns, which is just phenomenal. But above and beyond everything else, as much as Di Natale is getting a lot of credit at the moment, I think you've got to look at Guidolin and say, if he doesn't get Coach of the Year this year, he never will. He's just been absolutely fantastic this season, given the resources that he's had available to him. And as I say, the fact that he's this comes off the back of 2 successive Champions League playoff places with Udinese, of all clubs, you know, this is one of the great unsung coaches.
And if it wasn't for maybe one of the most spectacular penalty misses that you'll see, they could have been in the Champions League group stage this season. Chris, thank you so much for joining us today on World Football Daily, mate. We always appreciate you coming on and having a chat with us. And we look forward to catching up with you, hopefully, just in time for the Coppa Italia final later on at the end of May, mate.
Fantastic. Look forward to it.
Cheers, Chris. Thanks for joining us, mate. Chris Folks there from Goal.com joining us here on World Football Daily, talking all things Italian football and Serie A, giving us the inside track on everything going on as we approach the last day of the season in Italy. Juventus are the champions. Napoli are guaranteed their Champions League football, of course.